to a new episode of Be a Fan. We are excited to be back to be able to cover the finals. We skipped the week. It was a good time to just get relaxation, get some recuperation, because we're going to have quite some break now between now and the next time we can talk about any NA teams. But the finals was effing nuts. And once you know it, if you listen to the show, we called it, or, you know, I'll give Mage all the credit. You called it. It was a TL win, a TL victory. I'm going to spoil that ahead. But the way that they did it, that was even better than what I had anticipated. So we're going to cover that a little bit. We're going to talk a little bit about what's happening in the NACL. And then we will dive into some happenings around the league, some of the bigger news that's going around and how the fans are chirping on social media about what they heard from a certain interview with a certain jungler. So we'll dive into that as in this show. You'll have that to prepare for. So let me just check in with my co-host, Mage. How's it going? How's it shaking? Referencing the 4.7 that you experienced or not experienced last week.
Oh, you know, it's going pretty good. I didn't actually feel that earthquake. I was actually at breakfast when it happened, I guess. And I know that I only knew that it happened because the table right next to me, somebody pulled out their phone, and because like a bunch of people were in my town for the eclipse, because I was along the totality, whatever.
Ooh,
so a bunch of people were
in
my town, nice. Out eating breakfast, and they were just like, "Oh, well, that's weird. It says that an earthquake happened back home." And I was like, "Oh, that's weird. I didn't think that those happened here."
Oh, that's what I'm talking about. Yeah, I saw it on Twitter. I think some of my New York friends were talking about it. It's like, earthquakes don't happen in the East Coast. What's going on? Naturally, Californians are making fun of us, saying like, oh, that's something that they nap through. But I have to remind them, the East Coast is not made to be earthquake-proof. We're hurricane-proof, not so much earthquake. But glad you're safe. Glad everything's okay. Andrea, how is Mexico? How is the little time you spent away from work?
It's pretty great. Everyone who's listening, Mexico is a great spot to take a vacation in. Not sponsored by anyone, just saying. it's always a great time. There's always a lot to do. And I literally live here, but I also like went around, walked around the beach, and had a lot of fun just being a tourist in my own city. So yeah, that's what I did. Pretty fun.
That's kind of nice. And of course, people, we are open to sponsors. If you like to sponsor this show, please hit me up at Be a Fan Prime on Twitter. We'll always welcome to advertise your business with us, as you can continue promoting why you love the NACL or in the LCS NA. I'm trying to match those two together. But I'm glad you get to enjoy your own home country and hometown. I live in Miami, and I do not like to be a tourist around here.
That's true. You live also
it's
in
awful being a tourist here. Yes, yes, yes. So we have a lot of exciting things to talk about. I know the LCS finals felt like an eternity ago, and we're raring to talk about MSI. We will save time for that in future episodes because I have to catch up on who made it. Some of the teams are still finalizing. LPL is not done yet. LCK is... Gen G is the only team that has locked in their spot, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep, HLE and T1 still got a fist fight to see who gets that second spot.
it's so bizarre, too. The first team that ended up in the loser bracket was not T1, it was HLE. And of course, if we have time to talk LCK, we'll definitely talk a little bit about the whole situation with the DDoS attack there. But let me see. I think LLA is Finnish and Summit did not make it. That's all I know.
No, but Jose de Odo did.
R7 did not fucking make it.
And
they actually got shit on like 3-0. It was not close.
FlyQuest versus Jose de Odo at MSI, so it's going to be fun. Mm-mm.
Oh, yeah. Oh, Jose didn't make it, huh? Oh.
No, Jose de Odo made it.
No, he did make it.
Oh, he didn't make it. He did make it. Okay.
Jose de Odo is going to be at MSI. That's what I'm saying. So he's probably going to face FlyQuest, I think. So that's going to be fun.
It's nice. Oh,
I miss him in LCS. I'm not going to lie. I love that man.
My goat.
Well, that is gets me all excited. Jose versus his old team. I forgot the LEC because I always forget about the Europeans. Who cares about them? Anyways, they're not done yet. We know that G2 is locked in and they still have to fight it out to see who's making it to second place that will lock in the second spot for MSI. Mm-hmm. Shaping up to be a fun international event.
I don't want to see any other team go to fucking MSI from Europe except for G2. I'm not going to lie. Watching some of these games is just absolutely disgusting, but I digress.
Lord, before we even start the show, you mentioned how your solo queue game felt like Vitality Fnatic, and I got that reference immediately because who the hell has like a 30-something to 20, 50-something total kills in one game, in a professional game?
Disgusting.
And it was disgusting the way they played. It's just awful. Anyways. So the other participants are remain to be seen, but for NA representative, we have runner-up FlyQuest and champion Team Liquid. Mage, I'm gonna let you take.
Right.
I'm gonna let you take this segment away. What did you see? What was happening in the series? And we're gonna cover the whole gamut because they shit on C9. Then they went against FlyQuest, and they did not look any different in how they prepared throughout the whole playoffs. Take it away.
Yeah, you already know, my boys on Team Liquid, we pull out the W. It was fantastic. So I think a couple of things that you definitely want to kind of bring up here is that in both the C9 and the FlyQuest series, except for like literally the one game where TL lost to Fly, they had such an incredible draft gap in like every single game. It shows that they were super prepared for everything that the enemy teams had been trying to do, along with the fact that like they had really good answers to like really simple things, right? So one of the big things is that, and you know, me personally, I'm like, maybe I'm a hater, but like there's a lot of Kalista priority in the LCS, right? Yes. I think there's a lot of Kalista priority, despite the fact that most NA AD carries cannot play it super well. And it's like it's one of those ADCs that's a little difficult to actually play around in terms of like getting like into the mid to late game, right? With that being said, a lot of like both C9 and FlyQuest were both contesting for this like first round Kalista pick, which I thought was ridiculous. So like for instance, in the first TLC9 game, C9 banned like Rell, which is one of Core's signature champions. Ashe, which is a champion that has so much priority in bot lane because it is one of those strong counters to Kalista, as well as the fact that, in particular, Core JJ's Ashe, which apparently they just were not showing in scrims, caught a lot of teams off guard when he was playing it on stage. And then they also banned Taliyah, right? And then TL bans were Nico, Ahri, and Yone for the first three. And C9 just dropped the Kalista first pick, right? TL do this, they're so well prepared for it because of the champs that are within their player rotation. They immediately go to a triple poke comp, right? Oh, yeah. Like they immediately go towards that. They grab the Varus, they grab Zyra and Ziggs, right? Mm-hmm. They immediately go towards this poke comp that makes it super difficult for Kalista to actually hit consistently because she's constantly needing to mind her positioning because you're going to get poked out if you don't. And as soon as you go to all in, you're usually already at half HP and you get hard punished by things like the Zyra slow, the Zyra ulti, the Varus ulti and the Varus slow and the Ziggs bombs and everything. So it's so tough for her to actually hit. So as soon as Kalista gets dropped, Team Liquid was like, we already know what our response is going to be. We're going to drop this triple poke kind of bursty composition and we're going to make it really difficult for Berserker to play, right? So immediately what they do is they essentially remove Berserker from that game because he has no way of actually playing out the laning phase is tough. The mid game is tough. Like there is no point in this game where Kalista feels like she can be impactful because of the way that she has to play around the kits of the enemy champions. And I would also like to bring up the fact that Team Liquid did essentially the same strategy in both of the series, but for different reasons. They attacked C9 and FlyQuest mids with their pick ban phases like pretty heavily because they know APA is like, and this is something that I'll touch on a little bit later, but they know that APA is not the strongest laner in the league. And what kind of pushes him through a lot of these situations is the fact that he gets really strong because he's a resource heavy mid laner and he likes taking waves. And a lot of the best champions in mid lane, he doesn't really play like at the same level as other. So what they do is, at least like I said, game one, they literally banned out triple mid laners. They banned out two of the best playmaking mids. So Nico and Ahri both got taken out, so JoJo had no access to them. And then immediately banned out the Yone as well, which got rid of one of JoJo's like fallback onto mid laners, which is actually what I mentioned last time that we talked, which is like, how do you actually win against C9 while you attack them in the draft? You remove the best playmaking options from JoJo and you remove a hyper carry from Berserker. What Team Liquid did was exactly that. They removed the best playmaking options that JoJo had, and then instead of banning out a lot of the hyper carries that maybe Berserker would play, they instead drafted their composition around making it really tough for him to play the game, right? Which is really, really good.
Absolutely.
And the same exact thing happens in the FlyQuest series as well, where you see that they're constantly banning out like Orianna and Ahri and stuff like that, and they're forcing Jensen onto these like high prio but like low damage or like really difficult to manage mid lane picks. So he played like what, Karma in the first game, Annie two games, and what did he, I have it all written down mm-hmm. at some point. Yeah, they picked Annie in game four. They picked Annie in game three.
Wait, I have it right here. They have Annie in the game four, too.
Oh, yeah, they picked Annie three games in a row.
Three games in a row.
Three
which
games
was
and a Karma, right?
Mind-numbingly disgusting why they would do that.
Yeah. I just need to bring this up for a second. Jensen's a good fucking mid laner. I don't know why they're forcing him on this fucking champion. Like, I fucking hate Annie. Like, this champion is absolute dog water, and nobody can convince me otherwise. Like, I get it. If you have your flash up and Tibbers, like, you have that option to be a really big playmaker. But holy god, you are a fucking nuclear missile that happens every 5 minutes, and you don't get a choice. And if you burn your flash defensively, or if you just don't have your stun up, or you don't have Tibbers up at the right moment, you are
useless,
completely useless, right?
Completely.
Mm-hmm. I digress from that. However, but yeah, in TL and C9, in that series, it was a lot of banning out JoJo's best picks and even the picks that he tends to fall back on, and then making it really difficult for Berserker to play the game based around the compositions that TL was drafting, where they were drafting very strong bot lane laning phases that are intentionally supposed to put Berserker and bot lane in the dirt. I think they picked. Did they pick Varus in all three games? Yeah, they get Varus in all three games against C9, which is insane because Varus is super strong in laning phase, scales super well, and like halfway through like the pick ban, you can choose to adjust the way that you want to play the champion, whether it's on hit attack speed or like lethality poke, right? So by just giving them Varus consistently, it's just like, okay, first of all, you're disrespecting Yon for some reason by not banning out this champion. Like, I don't understand why nobody really banned Varus against them. Like, the entire in either of the series, they just gave that champion over to them over and over and over again. And I mean, they were able to abuse it. They were able to use it and at every single point in the game, in all of the games. Like, it was always good whenever they used it. But going back, a couple of like important things to mention that I think are just fun to mention. Fudge was completely fucking useless in all three games, and you could tell he was completely tilted by the last game as well. Like, that was insane. I don't know what he was doing. Like, I don't know if he like super lost confidence or something, but he was just completely useless. In order to quote fucking Inspired, complete vegan player. Like, it's disgusting. He did nothing. He literally only looks good on one champion, and it's Renekton. And I'm pretty sure, did they ban it every single?
Let me see. I don't.
They might have banned it every game. Maybe not.
No. Wait.
TL banned.
RP means
Nocturne and Twisted Fate in the first game, and they gave him Renekton.
One game. The only game two that Renekton was picked.
Yeah.
Oh no. Game three was that? Oh.
No, because they gave him Olaf in game three.
Ah.
But I digress. It's not super important. Mm-hmm. Basically, Renekton is like the only champion that Fudge looks like he can do anything on. And even in the games where he looks like he can do something, he's still laning against Impact, so he's essentially still useless, right? One of the things that I mentioned last time that we talked about C9 is that you don't want Jojopune on champions like Karma. And lo and fucking behold, after they whittled down the mid pool enough, they forced Jojopune onto Karma. And it looked completely fucking useless in every way imaginable. He was not playing around his team super well. He could not make plays on his own super well. All he could do was push out his lane and hope for the best. And we saw how well that worked when they tried to dive top lane with three people and then lost one and Impact didn't even die. So it's like, why the like, I don't know why. I don't know who, like, is it just Miffy on the C9 coaching staff? Because I know they lost a bunch of people. I'm pretty sure it's just Miffy.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. It's just Miffy.
His draft was disgusting. Like, it was bad. Like, there's no way around it. It was legitimately just bad drafting because there's no way you have a player like Jojopune and you think, oh, yeah, we'll just put you on Karma. Like, that just makes no sense to me.
Yeah. I gotta say, the moment they picked Karma, you were the first man I thought of as like, oh, he mentioned that in the pod. That's awesome.
Yeah.
And yes, lo and behold, they were useless. He cannot, he should not ever be on a Karma. And I wonder why, you know, they had a lot, they still had a, I mean, they banned him out, but he still could have done a pocket pick. They had to have thrown everything out in this last game, knowing that they could have been swept. And they didn't. They just went with just a really, really poor preparation. A draft, comp, everything, execution. That was very lackluster. Are you going to move on to the next game? Because I want to take a moment to kind of go over C9 a little bit.
I mean, you can take it from here for a little bit. Yeah, no, I mean, I have okay. So much that I could say, but I can calm it down a bit.
Okay. I just want to get pitch this to Andrea, you know, just an overall global thought of C9, where we had them at the beginning of the split and how they finished this split. Give us your impression, like, you know, what is it surprising? You know, what is this C9 team that, you know, we had high hopes for and how they ended their playoff run?
I mean, it's just, I don't know what to say, like, they really, I hope they will show up. Because they already had shown that they were completely clueless and they still were completely clueless when it came to the finals weekend. So it was a little bit sad. Like, you want to see Jojo win. I want to see Jojo win, man. He's such a great player. And I'm, you know, I'm a big fan of Laver. And, like, I don't know what happened to that team. I think it was just such a dysfunctional team. It just, but, like, I don't know how you mess that up. Like, I don't know how you have just some of the best players in the entire league, like MVP level players in almost every role, and you just mess that up. It's crazy to me that happened, but it is what it is. Hopefully, we have been hearing rumors already. I mean, we already know that Miffy is out, so and there's been, like, leaks around what's going to happen. So I hope for the good of the LCS, I hope they can figure it out, because it's not good for us to not have our best players play in a good team. It just feels so bad.
Yeah, absolutely. And it will be a weird not seeing Jojo and Blabber at an international event, but you know, changes are coming. We'll preview
APA
that
once again.
We'll preview it.
Stop
now
Jojo's path to an international.
Oh, that's true. APA, the trash talk was heavy before the game. Oh man, and of course Jojo is scamming people now with his tweets. Even C9 has tweeted that out.
Yeah, he's scamming people that. Again. Don't believe his lies.
Okay. Really. Do not fall for it, guys. And so I'll pitch it back to you again, Mage. What else do you have to talk about this series, or we are ready to head on to the next
Just
one?
Just a little bit more. I wanna talk really quickly. I want to at least mention that the second all-time jungle pentakill in North America happened by Umpty on Jax against Cloud9 in Game 1. And I also want to mention the fact that the only other North American jungle pentakill is also on a Team Liquid jungler, which was Piosik last year as Viego against, what was it, FlyQuest? So all I'm saying, like, Korean junglers thrive on Team Liquid, man. That's all I'm saying. but, like, getting back into the actual, like, meat of everything, like, yeah, I think overall Cloud9 just played really poorly. I think it's really tough when, because, like, getting to that point of, like, oh, how do you fuck up this roster so badly? I think it inherently comes from mid jungle, because it's the fact that Jojopune as a mid laner does want resources. He wants to get ganked. He wants to receive counter ganks. He wants to maintain a really good tempo so that he can move around the map. And the best way to do that is by having a jungler who's willing to drop camps and go to your lane and maybe miss a couple of timings and like lose some camps to a jungle invade. And Blabber is not that kind of jungler to make those kind of sacrifices. He's very efficient. He is very much, I want to farm and then I'll team fight later and be the second strongest person on the map at any given point. So it's a really difficult stylistic mesh between the two of them. And when your jungle mid duo has that sort of clash, it's really difficult to have anything efficient happen on the map overall, right? Because then either one of two things is happening. Either JoJo is dropping waves and losing tempo to force plays on some side of the map for really no reason, or Blabber is not able to play the play style that he's most comfortable in by doing the same exact thing where he's like losing camps randomly because he needs to go to mid lane or he needs to make a play somewhere that JoJo's making a play or cover JoJo on a gank timer that the enemy team's going to have, knowing that JoJo's going to be aggressive. So it's really difficult for those two stylistically to match. Which is why, and I mentioned, I think I might have mentioned it in the last pod or in one of the previous ones, why players like Jensen have always looked a lot better with Blabber, because he is much more willing to drop waves and much more willing to play around his team versus a player like JoJo, who is very much like, I'm going to smash my lane and I need you to help me do it.
Yeah, that synergy issue was brought up in the mid-season, right? JoJo fits better with an inspired type of jungler, and you're right, a Blabber fits better with a Jensen type of mid, and that's weird because Blabber and Jensen and inspired are in the same team. They have a good amount of success, but you know, it's just that, like you said, they're stylistically not meshing and they need a lot of work on it.
That sounds like Cope to me. I feel like JoJo has shown before, and we saw him play in Evil Geniuses Academy during his entire first year as a pro gamer to play facilitator for contracts. And he was playing Set, he was playing Lulu, he was playing Renekton. Those were his best picks. Set, Lulu, and Renekton. Those were the things that he was shining the most on because he was an engaged player. So I think it's crazy to me that they cannot just adapt and make him work with Blabber, because I think he's a very flexible player. He's not just, you know, he's not just that silly guy who's just going to smash lanes and all that. I think that's just the coaching. What is the coaching doing? I just don't think they were,
not his job.
I think that fit together is wild.
Well, I think that is the, I think it is the issue, but I think the coaching staff not being able to bring that up and talk to them and talk them through that is definitely a part of the problem as well, right? It's not solely that, like, oh, they're incapable of doing this. It's the fact that, like, no one is telling them, like, hey, you have to make these sacrifices. Also, you guys have to do these things.
A lot more flexible than people give him credit for, too. Like, he's capable of playing different things. I remember when he was, like, insane on the Sejuani, and he had, like, the best Maokai win rate in the LCS last year. So it's like,
I mean, we gotta consider meta too, though, right? Like, if you're taking a look at the metas between last year or when JoJo was on Academy, like, those are completely different worlds that we live in right now, because the mid lane is completely different, the jungle is completely different, the game itself, items are different. Sure, in a world where Renekton, Set, Lulu were able to be played mid, that's great. If any of those champions get picked mid right now, they get absolutely demolished and they have no chance of having an effect on the game, right?
I mean, JoJo picked Set last year at Worlds. Let's remember that. He pleaded for Inspired. So, like, it's not like he's incapable of doing things like that. And
that
was
2 years ago.
Well,
that was 2022.
Whatever. The point, but that wasn't meta when the UC set mid played.
How well did EG do
in 2022? They trioed that series. That's what I'm talking about.
I forgot.
One good counter. I don't think that's a good enough example to say that, like, oh yeah, he can just drop.
Well,
that.
I mean, is that. Yeah, I'm talking about these picks in particular, but what I'm saying is that those are not the only champions who fill those roles. There's other champions that fulfill the same type of roles as being engaged and being facilitators. So it's like, just find the picks that are going to work in it, because you're putting him in a journey and he's not even good at journey. Like, let's be real. He's not Palafox. He's not good at the champion. And it's like, why are we doing that? Why are we putting a Berserker on Lucian when his Lucian win rate is like 30% or something? Like, please. Yes. So for real, you cannot come here and put your players in their worst possible picks
player on
and expect it to work out when you already know that your team isn't working out together. So you could at least put them on something that's comfortable and put them on something that makes sense for them. But no, they are putting them in their lowest win rate champions for some reason, and like it just shows that they really didn't seem to know what they were doing.
So I mean, they talked about that, didn't they? Like I specifically Lucian, like I'm almost entirely certain that is Berserker's choice. Like he wants to play that champion, at least for that example. I'm almost entirely certain that's his comfort pick.
I mean,
so I think
I don't know
we're
how
all...
to tell you. Like, he's not very good at playing Lucian either. So like, that's his comfort pick.
I'm not disagreeing that he looks like shit. I'm just saying I'm pretty sure that's like his choice. He wants to play that champion.
But like, okay, so where's the coach telling you this is not ideal here? Mm-hmm. Right. And
I think
it's not working with us. It's not working for us because it hasn't been working. The times he has played it, if they
I think
won,
we're
it
all
wasn't
kind
because of him. Sorry.
We're all bringing up great points. I think we're all talking about different aspects, but coming to the same conclusion. The coaching did not do its job because Blaber and JoJo, like we mentioned, they're both flexible players. And in this situation, I think they've become a little too flexible because the interview that I heard was Inspired was very pointed in telling JoJo, I need this, I need you to do that. And JoJo would do it because he had a strong voice to follow. And in this team, he had to develop that for himself because Blaber wasn't as demanding. And so half of the time, he doesn't know what Blaber wants. And he doesn't even know if Blaber acknowledged what he said that he would, what JoJo wanted to do. So there's a big like gap in that because Blaber then started to do his own thing. JoJo started to do his own thing, and they both come up with their own idea of what the winning condition is. That's on the coach. Like you said, they didn't point that out or they didn't really fix that. They kept playing what they thought was the best way. So they operated like a separate entity. And then we bring up the whole Berserker idea. Yes, it could be a comfort champ. It doesn't matter. They sucked on stage, and yet Mythy wasn't strong enough to say, no, don't do that. We are going to play a style that would fit as a team. He didn't. They just let them run the show.
Yeah, I mean that's always been Mythy's thing, though. Like he's never been like a hard ass coach, at least from what I've heard. He's always been like, I'm gonna appease the players if this is what they like, then I'm gonna trust them and they're gonna do it. I agree. Maybe he just shouldn't have trusted Berserker to do this. Also, I think Berserker's build is fucking disgusting on Lucian. It is horrid, and I hate looking at it every time. But I digress. Like low elo, mid elo, solo queue. I was like, I'm gonna give this a shot. It felt like dog. It felt horrible to play. You're a one auto ante. Like it did not feel good.
So yeah, that is our dirge to C9 spring split, which arguably just as disappointing as FlyQuest summer 2023 split. Even though FlyQuest ended worse, but it just felt super disappointing. Let's talk about the champs, though. We're here to celebrate the champs. How did they do in finals week, finals day?
Pretty damn good. You know, I think in the FlyQuest games, it's weird. Like, I feel like, and it sounds so stupid, but like, it almost feels like they shouldn't have won. Like, that's the whole thing. Like, if you watch the regular season, even if you watch the playoffs, you just kind of think to yourself, I don't know if Team Liquid really should have won these games. But they did anyway. Like, especially that first game, I'm going to put this out there. I actually liked the FlyQuest draft in that game, but holy God, did they just... Okay, listen, I hate... Okay, I'm gonna do this. I'm going to flame Busio for a little bit, okay?
Oh my God.
This guy ran it down 3 times and gave Team Liquid the lead that they needed to actually win this game. Because in my personal opinion, I think if you look at these drafts, Team Liquid should not have been able to get a lead at any given point in this game, but they were it was handed to them like on a silver platter, like in the form of a Nautilus hook. Mm-hmm. It was disgusting. Okay, like can we talk about that first fucking dragon contest that they were trying to make? And it's like, okay, you have 4 fly people in the mid side, and then Kai'Sa is solo farming a wave in bot lane. The dragon is fucking dead already. So what do? You walk out, right? Right? Doesn't that sound like reasonable? Nah. Busio hooks in. He goes in 1v5. Kai'Sa is nowhere to be seen. They have no consistent damage anywhere on their squad. FlyQuest has to be calling to pull out of this fight because it makes no sense to take it at all. and he just goes in for no reason. And I have no idea, because I watched this happen. I was like, he's inting, right? Like, he has to be just hard inting this moment right now. It made no sense to me to go in. But he goes in regardless, and he fucking dies for it. Deserves death. Horrible engage. Literally makes no sense to make. The second time he runs it down is they literally see, like, the wave is stacking. It's really obvious Team Liquid wants to dive bot. And it's so obvious that Umpty stands on a ward for 10 fucking seconds. And they see him. And you know what? Mazu has the foresight to be like, you know, I'm going to walk back to our second tier. I don't think it's worth getting killed here. Busio just fucking stays under the tower as a level 6 volley bear, like, happily strolls down into bot lane, presses his R button, and just annihilates Nautilus. For no, like, there's no reason to stay there. You have more than enough time to just walk out. Or at the very least, maybe you get caught by Volibear, but as long as you're using your dredge line on the wall quick enough to stop the volley stun, you're fine. You're gonna walk out of that situation regardless, because you know that he's there. Mm-hmm. So you might lose the wave, you might lose the XP, yeah. But it's better than just dying there for no reason and still losing all that XP. And then at the next dragon contest, FlyQuest, finish the dragon. It's done. It's gone. You can leave through bot lane. He fucking hooks in again. No, he doesn't even hook in. He's late to leave, and then he hooks the wall like exactly adjacent to him, so he doesn't move forward at all and gets popped. It gives impact, and that was Team Liquid saying, like, oh, wait, guys, they're running it down. They're not leaving fast enough. Impact, come bot. We can make a play here. Impact TPs, and it's two kills easy for Team Liquid. They lose a dragon, but they get two bodies, and they're able to get better tempo on the map. It makes literally no sense. These three plays in conjunction, all centered around Busio, give the Smolder and Team Liquid the lead that they need to facilitate a 1-19 kill game.
Yes,
it was disgusting. It was disgusting. Like, I get it. It's Busio's first finals, right? And like, and this also does come back to like the All Pro, because when I saw Busio first team All Pro support, I thought that was completely fucking fraudulent. I thought he got All Pro because he was on the first place team. Because if fucking B-Voy can get first team All Pro AD carry, Ole deserved first team All Pro support. And you cannot convince me otherwise that Ole wasn't the best fucking support in the regular season. I digress from that point, though.
Yes. It all made sense. And yes, I was watching the highlight just now, and those hooks absolutely made no sense. Absolutely made no sense. I wouldn't even do that. And I'm a bronze player. Okay, I'm a little bit too on that. But those were really questionable, what he was thinking and doing. He seems more nervous than Masu.
Oh, absolutely. Which is entirely. And like that, like, I'm not going to say that, like, oh yeah, no, he's like a shit player and needs to be kicked out of lead. No, he was playing super terribly. Like that was like, it's in it. Like, mm-hmm. Like nerves. Yes. Excusable. Probably not still. Like, you're still going to be getting punished by your team for doing stuff like that. But like, again, he's not the sole reason why they're losing these games. Cause like, he actually plays pretty well for the rest of the series overall, I would say. It's just that, like, that game, like, that was the exciting force for the game to be run away with. And there are plenty of other issues, right? Dwippo had a horrid laning phase in top lane against Impact. And then I don't know. Like, they were just constantly, after those plays happened, FlyQuest obviously felt pressured to make something happen, right? So they were trying to force fights on mid and in top in these timings where it's like, it doesn't make a lot of sense. So, like, maybe if we catch them off guard, we can find something. And it was just a highlight reel of Inspired going in too far because he has no other choice. And they have to try to make something happen. And it was just them dying over and over and over, trying to make a play, trying to make a pick. And it just couldn't, it just never could work out for them. Mm. Also, Bwippo.
And that was.
Bwippo's Urgot is not what it used to be. This, like, I don't know, like, I'm gonna talk about it slightly too, because I've been the big whip guy, right? Mm-hmm. But like, holy fuck, this guy was just running it down, like, in every game, essentially. He was just running it down. His laning phase was not good in most of these games, except for like game two, where it was like pretty solid. It was
two.
Not good. Actually, even in game two, his laning phase wasn't even that good. Like, it's actually insane to me that this guy talked all of that shit and then giga choked in the finals. Like, he, like, he, like, he had as much nerves as Busio did, in my opinion. Like, he had to have been as nervous. Like, it was insane the way that he played these lanes. It was like, just like, he's making horrible trades right in front of the tower, like in the face of a Cassante, and it's like, you know what you're doing, right? Like, you're literally making the active choice to lose your lane by Urgot E-ing forward into a Cassante under his turret, right? Like, you know that that's the wrong play to make. You have to know that's the wrong play to make.
Yeah. I wonder, like, I would like to hear from him. I wonder how much of it was his, like, trying to do too much for the team because he felt like he was the only one, or it was more so like a personal vendetta against Team Liquid. But either way, he did not look good. I'm looking just from the stat, you can tell that story, and it was a rough series for him.
It was pretty bad. Completely. It was pretty tough.
And so, like you said, first game, 19-1. That was a whooping. And Yon looked great on the
Smolder. Yeah, Yon looked great on Smolder. Fucking roses are red, violets are blue. Fucking, I hate my life. Like, what else is new?
But thankfully, that was the last.
Thank God,
seen of
that champion's never getting played in pro again. I hope.
Onwards
into other games. Unless Andrea has anything to say about game one from FlyQuest TL.
Not really. I think I will just talk about the series in general. All
right.
So we can move on. Game two into.
Game two, this was an interesting one. Like, this was, like, obviously the closest game. This is a game that Fly actually got away with. It was pretty much off of the back of, like, what was it? Team Liquid make a really good early counter gank. Like, Umpty has really good movement here in this game. But personally, I hate him on Sejuani. I don't know why they're picking this champion for Umpty. Like, in terms of the way that Umpty wants to play the game, where he's in your jungle from like 2 minutes 50 seconds to 3 minutes and 50 seconds, where he's trying to invade, Sejuani does not have a super fast clear time and does not have a great way to contest like camps, like not in the same way that other champions do, where you combo her abilities with her smite and it'll just do a fuck ton of damage, which is why Rell gets banned so frequently against Team Liquid, because it's one of Umpty's good picks and it's one of Core JJ's signature picks, right? So they pick the Sejuani here. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's a good look for Team Liquid. I actually think Team Liquid get pretty outdrafted in this game overall. What ends up happening in this game is, like, what? Impact solo kills Whippo somehow in the top lane or as Renekton into Cassante. Doesn't make any fucking sense. Early gank towards mid gets counter ganked by Umpty, and APA gets away with, like, literally 1 HP. Absolute fucking criminal mentality. Insane that that's allowed to happen. There was a couple of things that happened where it's like, what? After dying top lane, Whippo says fuck it and runs mid and kills APA. That was really, that was a really good rotation. He loses nothing from topside from doing that, and he kills the enemy mid laner. Like, that was really, really good. Bot lane. Oh, I want to talk quickly about the bot lane 3v3 that happened, because TL was, like, stacking a wave that they really wanted to crash to get the reset timer off, and Umpty reads the fact that, like, oh, yeah, we need to do this, and Inspire's going to want to be there to make this, to stop us from doing this. So I'm going to just sneak into the bottom brush and force this to, and like, when they try to force this play, we're going to force first, which is exactly what happens. Core, like, Abyssal dives forward into a brush and, like, misses everybody. But, like, they force the fight before Lee Sin even gets there. But as Inspired is showing up, he throws a Q out, and I'm just going to talk briefly about this because it's not super important, but Core JJ just, like, flashes in front of the Lee Sin Q, takes all of that damage so that Yon is able to pull off, like, stay alive for just that much longer and get a kill back, and it becomes a 1-for-1 in a situation that very realistically would have been just two deaths on Team Liquid. Like, bot lane would just be dead if Umpty wasn't there, right?
Good.
Overall, I think Umpty played the laning phase really well. He was consistently hovering counter ganks around mid and bot, which is exactly where he has to be, because those are the lanes in which Inspired really needs to be able to make plays around the Annie and around this bot lane that's going to get pushed in the entire game, because ganking the Cassante makes literally no sense as Lee Sin. You're not going to do enough damage to him, probably. Really, where this game gets broken open by FlyQuest is Jensen giga baits Impact into staying top lane for really no reason at all, because Whippo goes out of vision and Jensen walks into the lane. Impact gets it in his head like, oh, Annie is up here. Whippo's nowhere to be seen. They're probably swapping lanes, so Annie's going to catch this wave for him, and then they're going to swap lanes for a second. And so he all-ins the Annie, gets ganked. Like, Whippo ganks his own lane as Renekton, and they kill Impact, which is really, really good, right? And this is like the beginning of that snowball where like Whippo gets a lot of gold. He's able to really be an absolute monster in the side lanes. And then FlyQuest's macro in this game was immaculate. Like, it was so good. Like, in that one fight around like the third dragon, Whippo is staying top lane and pushing the top side second tier turret, right? FlyQuest recognized that Whippo wants to probably that somebody's communicating, obviously, but they're like, yeah, Whippo wants to push his turret. The dragon's up. We want to contest it, but like maybe we probably shouldn't without Renekton here, and we don't want to force his teleport down here at this moment. So FlyQuest approach as three people from mid lane into the river towards dragon, and Team Liquid recognize it, and they're like, oh, they're approaching from mid. Renekton's still top. It's going to be difficult for them to fight. If we zone them off in this area, there's no way for them to actually come into this fight and do anything and take this dragon. But what they don't realize is they're not marking Lee Sin. They don't know where Inspired is. And he gets this, like, he gets over the wall, gets into the pit. And as soon as he's going into the pit, Busio hooks inwards, baits Team Liquid into thinking, oh, they're starting a fight. Renekton's going to TP. So all of Team Liquid, including Umpty, who's on the dragon, go to make this play happen. And Inspired goes over the wall, steals the dragon, and then leaves. And then the rest of FlyQuest, because of their positioning, are able to just walk out. Whippo gets tier 2 top lane turret, and it's just an absolute horror show for Team Liquid from that point onward, because they lose the dragon, they lose top tier second turret, and they don't get anything anything back. They don't even get a kill. So what ends up happening is Team Liquid tries to force this play. They try to force something to happen here because they know that, like, oh shit, we're losing a lot of gold. We're bleeding out right now. We need to put a Band-Aid on this, so if we can get a pick on their recalls, maybe we'll be fine. They overextend into a fight. And the Rift Herald gets dropped in bot lane by FlyQuest. It takes tier 1 bot turret, and Inspired gets a super incredible kick on Yawn in like the tier 2 bot lane turret, and it completely opens up the game. Like Whippo getting a lead in top was like, that was like a trigger, but Inspired getting this kick and winning this team fight for FlyQuest, that is what lets them actually like get a stranglehold on the game, right? So at the end of this play, at the end of this like really gorgeous macro, what ends up going FlyQuest's way? Can you guys still hear me? It says my internet was disconnecting me. Okay. Yeah.
Mine too. But nice.
What ends up happening is FlyQuest get top lane tier 2 turret, the dragon. They get bot lane tier 1 turret, bot lane tier 2 turret, and they get a fuck ton of kills on Team Liquid. The game is over at that point. Team Liquid get like they steal a dragon at some point later in the game, which kind of keeps them around. But like, it's like based on the way the FlyQuest drafted, like at some point they just kind of recognized that they were fucking stronger than Team Liquid at this stage in the game, because they picked all like mid game champions and they just ran them down in team fight after team fight until they won the game.
Unfortunately, this was also the last time Annie looked decent or good.
Yeah.
At this point, I would say like, FlyQuest is just looking back like themselves. They figured some things out and they're sorted out and figured it would be a good series. So I was hoping that this would be the turnaround, but then comes game 3. Liquid on the blue side, FlyQuest on the red side.
Absolute.
Impact picked Twisted Fate.
I was not expecting that. I mean, this game was a horror show for FlyQuest. They miss a ban during the pick ban phase, first of all. So that was their fault. So they just don't get the ban. They don't get to remake it. So they just lose an entire ban for no reason at all. And then, I don't know. Like, so many things went wrong. Like, first of all, the draft, I think the drafts are really cool here. I think this draft was really good. Twisted Fate top versus Gangplank, I think that's an immaculate matchup. I think Whippo had a great read on that situation, and he punished Impact super hard for picking that champion, because Impact also didn't fucking take teleport. So he had Ghost. So what Whippo was doing is he was poking down. He got an early gank from Inspired, forced Impact to be super low in the lane, and full knowing that if Impact leaves, he just gets frozen on and gets completely fucked for the rest of the game by GP. Impact is forced to stay, and he ends up losing more because he gets way too low to contest like a triple stacked wave in topside, and he ends up losing all of that XP and all of that gold, and then they just keep going back top lane to try and gank. And the plan looks like they were trying to go back top to keep Impact from becoming relevant in the game. Unfortunately, a lot of those plays don't go super well, They don't go good at all, even, I would venture so much as to say. We're like, yeah, they're getting maybe one kill, but a lot of the time they are losing way too much on, like, the other side of the map as well to actually make anything happen in this game. It's, I don't know. There are just a couple of really bad fights in the top side, a couple of bad dives that just don't look like they make any sense whatsoever. There was that one gank in particular, and I think Inspired was talking about it in that interview, where, like, Jensen has flash, yes, and he wants Jensen to flash Tibber's impact. He's charging up his Viego W at the same time because he wants to make this play happen. And Jensen flashes, like, I would say, yeah, pretty late. He's a little bit too close to the turret. Maybe he thinks that, like, oh yeah, you still have enough burst to kill this champion. I think, yeah, maybe you do probably still have enough burst to kill that champion in that situation. But Umpty is there. So Inspired pulls out of the play, and then obviously Jensen gets engaged on, and it just turns into an absolute horror show for FlyQuest because Umpty gets these kills, and Jax with those kills is just giga strong and is able to run away with the game. Plus, like, you have, like, an A-Soul on that team as well, so it's just really difficult after a certain point to be impactful as Viego. I would say overall Game 3 was the slowest game because it was, like, essentially five champions that really want to scale. Because, like, what, GP, TF, A-Soul, Jax, and Senna were, like, these are champions that do really, like, obviously TF can do a lot more in the, like, the early to mid game, but, like, these are champions that do kind of want to wait for a while to become stronger. But overall, it was just, like, really, really slow gameplay, really patient from Team Liquid in most of the phases of the game, and it just kind of got, like, it was just kind of a slow burn, sort of, like, they were accumulating gold the entire time. It's not, there's not a lot to really talk about in terms of, like, actual analysis. Also, like, Whipple was staring at his fucking ultimates in top side for some reason and dies to APA for literally no reason, so, like, I don't even know how much I want to analyze a game like this, because their fucking heads were not in it, right? So,
is there any thought that missing the ban just started snowballing?
I think the 1-19 game started the mental boom, to be honest. Like, they might have won game two, but, like, that game did not start off well, right? Like, that was them clawing back that game because it was, like, pretty, like, even early, and they were even getting outplayed. So I think it was very much like that first game triggered them a bit, and they still had nerves going into the second game. They were able to pull it back, so they're relieved in that way. But going into game three, especially after missing that ban, like, that was just like, okay, like, are we even playing the game right now? Like, are we even here? I don't even know.
Yeah. And it seemed from there, the recovery was just not there. After this game, I sort of felt this is probably going to end in four games. It's not going to go to Silver Scrim. Now, this is, of course, hindsight talking. I have to remember what I was feeling that day. But when Team Liquid took the lead 2-1, I felt the momentum was building. And like I mentioned in the last pod, it was felt very similar to EG once you start taking down the favorites, right? Once you start showing up and having these outplays. And some of them are like, what just happened? They lost all confidence from the appearance of it. I'm looking at this from a fan perspective. Of course, I don't have analysis and in my background. So rolling into game four, it was you know, I'll let you talk about it. But the end score, I'll spoil it right now. It's 23-9, and fairly it's not a quick game, but it didn't look like FlyQuest was in there anymore.
Yeah, I mean, that was a pretty tough one as well to look at. I think Olaf is a fake champion. I think that champ. I think everybody watched Sniper play that champion, and now they're like, oh yeah, no, maybe it's good. And I know, like, Whippo in particular has been known to play Olaf sometimes, but, like, I think the champion is completely fake, especially when you're playing it into Impact. It just seems so useless most of the time. And they choose to blind Olaf in their draft and also pick Rumble. And, like, credit to Busio, in the lane phase, he piloted Rumble really, really well. So I'll talk about the good things that happened for FlyQuest first, right? First of all, really solid level one invade. They deny Poppy her Raptor camp. Inspire gets super ahead. And then Umpty is forced to make a choice, which is either, okay, bite the pillow and just farm the rest of your jungle, hope Lee Sin doesn't walk in, or try to contest Lee Sin on one of his buffs. So what Umpty does is he does his wolves and immediately runs to the enemy red buff. Inspired at this point had taken his own Raptors, thinking that Umpty would probably want to go take the Raptors, and then by the time that he's working on his red buff, Umpty is already in his jungle, and Umpty is able to steal it away. which turns into this 2v2 between Inspired and Jensen and APA and Umpty, because APA, Umpty move first, obviously, because they know what, like, they're like talking to themselves. They're like, hey, we want to make this play. We want to force this to happen. So they walk in first. They get cut off by Jensen's Annie, who has stun up, and lo and fucking behold, they're able to win out that fight because Team Liquid forced this play that, in my opinion, shouldn't really have happened, and they get punished super hard for it. So both APA and Umpty die, which is really good for FlyQuest for their state of the game, right? Mm-hmm. Other than that, like, what else is important? Like, Bwipo is having a really difficult time playing top lane into Impact. Oh, he almost gets solo killed by Impact again. He has to, he's just running for his fucking life in this lane. It's so tough. It's like, and it's also just like fighting in this game. Like, there's so much skirmishing happening. It doesn't even feel like, oh, this is a game that's happening on stage. This is like a fucking scrim. Like, this doesn't look super serious either. Other positives that FlyQuest have, they played bot lane really, really well. It was Nautilus and Varus for Team Liquid, right? Varus, sorry. And then it was Busio on Rumble with Kalista. Right, and credit to them, they played the laning phase really well. Rumble's one of those champions that punishes super strong melee supports really, really well. It's a reason why he's getting picked. There's a reason why he's getting picked in Korea. And Busio does a really good job of actually punishing Core JJ's Nautilus for like walking up too far, trying to be the punishing one on his end. Anyways, other than that, they are consistently stacking waves in the bot lane as on Core JJ's roam timers and diving Yon over and over again. Masu gets a giga lead in bot lane. Like, I think he was up like maybe 40 CS at some point, and it looked very much like Masu's game to lose. It looked very much like a FlyQuest game to lose at that stage in the game, because consistently Inspired recognized, like, hey, we're going to win through bot lane. So he goes bot, he dives bot like two or three times, and they get a super big lead on the Kalista, which is exactly where you want Kalista to be relevant in the later stages of the game. That's all the good things that I have to say about FlyQuest. Unfortunately, because Bwipo and Inspired consistently are getting caught on Vision over and over and over again, trying to force plays or contest wards or contest sides of pressure, and they are consistently getting caught out for absolutely no reason and getting punished for it. And in the midst of it all, Jensen is also dying because he's trying to move to his jungler, who's dying towards mid. And maybe if he was there quicker, something could have happened, but it doesn't make any sense for him to really move there because the play is over by the time he makes it, and then he dies anyway for reason. And Masu, who had this big lead, now has to contest a super fed Team Liquid squad because his jungle and top lane could not keep it in their pants long enough to win the game in the mid to late game, right? and eventually, what ends up happening is FlyQuest do make a good play where they catch Umpty out, right? They catch Umpty out, and FlyQuest have a really good window to go to Baron. But I don't know why. I don't know who was making the call, but it was a very slow call to go to Baron. Like, for whatever reason, they caught Umpty, and they're like, in my opinion, it was like, okay, you go to Baron now. Like, you can contest. You have Rumble ulti, you have Olaf, you have all of these abilities to keep Team Liquid from entering, and they have no jungler. So it's really tough for them to contest this right now. Just go to Baron. They lingered around like the mid jungle for a little bit too long and eventually made their way to Baron. And by the time they were working on it, Umpty had showed up again, and Busio, who realistically could have been hitting the Baron and zoning with his ultimate, chose to instead zone Team Liquid with his body and got popped for it, which turned it into essentially an unwinnable situation for FlyQuest because they were too low to fight Team Liquid. The Baron was getting to a point where if Team Liquid contested them right now, they would just flat out steal it from them, most likely, because Inspired was getting really low. And Yon, of all fucking players, has a really good flank through the jungle, and they were able to actually corral FlyQuest towards the top lane and annihilate them. And in this moment, Team Liquid steal the, like, quote unquote, they steal the Baron, they take it away from them. And at that point in the game, there was so much standing gold left on the map for Team Liquid. Like, there were still first tier turrets up, there were plenty of objectives elsewhere on the map, plenty of the enemy team's jungle to farm. Team Liquid took all of that in droves, and they were able to create a huge gold advantage for themselves, like 4 or 5k gold advantage from just taking the Baron away from FlyQuest, who were trying to do it, taking a bunch of turrets that were still standing because Team Liquid had a really rough laning and taking away a lot of the camps from Inspired because he was too weak to contest them on his own. And even if he wasn't on his own, they were just overall too weak to contest anything Team Liquid were trying to do. I think what ends up happening overall is FlyQuest are like, okay, this is a really tough game state. What are we supposed to do? And they lose the direction. And there are a couple of times around the map where single FlyQuest players, like it happens to Busio, it happens to Jensen, it happens to Inspired, and it happens to Whipple, where they just get caught at random timers, like for no reason. Like they're on waves that they shouldn't be in. They're in places they shouldn't be in. Like they know that in like the vision line, like the line of pressure that Team Liquid has is so deep in the FlyQuest jungle that they cannot contest further than like the Raptor camp, but they consistently walk up towards River and get punished for it. And FlyQuest slowly start bleeding out more and more and more to the point where like, okay, fuck it, we need to try to make a fight happen. They try to fight around Baron, they get absolutely fucking annihilated. They lose Baron, they lose Dragon Soul, Inspired and Whipple are just running it down for fun at this point, it seems, and Team Liquid eventually come out with the
man, and that's how they are crowned the LCS Spring Split champ. That was a very, very good retelling, honestly. It made me rethink the whole game and how that all unfolded, and wow, just an amazing way to kind of unexpected. So Andrea, let's bring your thoughts into this series.
I think TL was fantastic. Honestly, I just don't know. I guess we were all kind of feeling like they could do this. I definitely was. So I wasn't certain like they will show up on the day, and they did, and it was fantastic, honestly. I was very happy to see them. You know, I'm a big fan of Impact, so he showed Impact playoffs impact. You know, you can always rely on that. I think Core JJ had amazing playoffs, but particularly this series, he was so good. What can I say? Like, all of the players were playing their best. But my favorite part of the series was the end, you know, like when they got to do their interviews, and it's basically the best post-series interviews we have seen probably in the history of the LCS. Like, all of the players brought the A game to the Inspired.
Agreed.
I just can't get over John talking about Inspired and Whipple who won't shut up. And he's like, I will normally not do this, but they won't shut up. And it was so, so good. Like, you know, these guys, like, John's very quiet, right? So it's like, you know, he was really, really waiting for this moment. Like, he wanted to say it for a long time. And just, I don't know, it was a great moment. Yeah. I was very, very happy. Wait, I can't lie. Like,
you said Jan was quiet. Oh, yeah. Man. Every interview I've seen with him, on the pros, whether it's on HL,
he does not give a fuss. But, like, he usually doesn't go out of his way to make that happen. I don't know if get my meaning accurate. Like, he's not making tweets like Volkan or Sven or even Core JJ. Sometimes people will say that Core JJ will write his tweets and stuff. Yeah. And it's like, yeah. So, like, he's not like this outgoing, like going out of his way to make a point about something, but he really, that moment, you could see that he was like, yes, this is the time. and yeah, I mean, APA was the most quiet of all of them, receiving like at the end the interviews, which I thought was pretty nice. He's like, yeah, I won. Impact, it was just another day at the job for him. He won another championship.
Six titles. Like,
yeah, he's at six now, which is a crazy number. Numpty, like king of the jungle in the LCS.
Oh, he was so happy.
Like, yeah, it was so nice to see him. Like the way he was just legitimately blown out by the win. So it was a very great Herafold moment. I think usually finals are, but like, yeah, the combination of those really hilarious interviews and that moment where Umpty was like, you could see the elation, like it was just beautiful. Very happy.
You gotta feel it for them. It's like it's been building throughout the whole split, and they've gotten like flack from other people. They gotten like shit talk from their own Discord, their own fans, how everyone wanted APA replaced. You gotta see all those built up over the split, and they just let it out, and just it was a great moment. It really honestly was.
I do think it is.
And so...
Sorry. I do think it is important to mention, though, that, like, yes, they did win, and they obviously improved significantly. Big props to their coaching staff for that, right? Like, their coaching staff went crazy with this squad. I think, I'm totally honest here. I've been one of the biggest APA haters. Like, I've been vocal about this player. I've talked about how he gets caught on side lanes. His landing phase is really bad. His champion pool is really difficult to work with. And these are, I feel these are still legitimate criticisms. But what makes this so good is that, yes, lows are legitimate criticisms from earlier in the year. Those same criticisms are much harder to actually make against him right now, because the way that the coaching staff actually worked with APA and worked with this team to make a lot of those weaknesses really strong strengths, right? So a lot of, like, the difference in the way that this team played, where APA is like, yeah, his laning phase was horrid. He was getting ganked and camped in every single game. He was the target in almost every single match that Team Liquid had in. And what they decided to do, okay, Umpty, hover around mid a little bit. Core JJ, get out of bot lane a little. We're gonna play around the fact that they want to kill APA, and we're going to counter gank them. And they did this so well in playoffs. They did it so well in the series against FlyQuest, where APA was once again the target by Inspired, the target by FlyQuest, and they were just turning plays because they knew that this is what they wanted to do. Right. Beyond that, it's also like. He was getting caught super hard in side lanes a lot of the time, like in really bad timers. And it still happened in some of these games. Like, I remember specifically there was one, I think maybe in the C9 game where he was like playing Tristana. Was that it? Yeah, that was a C9 game. Yeah, he gets caught in the side for like literally no reason. Nothing happens. Yeah. Like, Team Liquid can't benefit from that in any way, shape, or form. But in a lot of these games, like in some of the ASOL games that he's played, he's sitting in a side lane and at the same time that he's in a side lane, the rest of Team Liquid is essentially slow baiting a fight and allowing APA to keep pushing and allowing him to catch waves and allowing him to get gold under his belt to become a much stronger carry later on in the game. And APA, to his credit, took over a lot of games using this strategy in tandem with Team Liquid, where he goes to a side lane. Team Liquid recognize, hey, APA wants to get, like, take this farm, take this time to scale, and we're going to be doing this around an objective timer, around like a timer that we can contest the enemy jungle. And in that timer, we're going to do those things regardless of whether or not he's with us. And either one of two things is going to happen. He's going to TP in and we're going to fight 5v5, or he stays in that side lane, we bait it out correctly, and he gets a fuck ton of gold and we are able to build an advantage off of his back, right? This is something that they worked on really, really well, and it ended up going really well for them. And then also, like, I think especially the thing that everybody talked about is his champion pool was really difficult to work with. Ziggs and Aesol were tough champions, at least at some point, to work with within compositions, right? And what Team Liquid did is they went deeper into it. They built entire poke comps built around Ziggs. They built comps completely built around allowing Aesol to scale. Right, they used the fact that people aren't banning his signature champions, and they built entire compositions around them, and they were able to create advantages because of it, and it looks really, really good. So again, to APA's credit, and to the credit of Spawn and the entire Team Liquid coaching staff, this player fucking sucked earlier in this year. Unironically, he looked terrible earlier this year, but they did a really good job of making him look, not even making him look, make allowing him to play better and play his style, right? Because APA, at least in solo queue, before he was doing all this stuff on Team Liquid, when he was on Maryville and stuff like that, he was climbing ladders, playing Talia and Aesol and roaming to sides and forcing plays in side lanes and being a strong side laner in the mid to late. And they played towards that strength that he's really, really actually very good at, but is much more difficult to play in professional scene, and they did it really, really well. They executed the way that he would want to play the game really, really well.
Absolutely. I think, this is the makings of a championship team, is that they are able to work with pieces, cover up the weaknesses, right, and make it work. And that's not to say it erased and his, like, the criticisms were not unwarranted. I just think this can give him the confidence boost and the ability to take the next step. We'll see how he does at MSI. I'm excited for him. I'm excited for the whole team to be at MSI, especially for Umpty. Is this his first
international MSI tournament, I believe. Check yes.
International. He wouldn't have made it at LCK.
No.
And yeah, so many teams he was on. Breon, Jhin Air. Ooh, tough. But this would be, I think this is a very exciting team, and I really do think we sent the two most exciting team, if not the two best team. Not the most talented. I'm still going to give C9 that title of talent, but talent means nothing if you can't put it together. So yeah,
This is the two representative for North America at MSI. Gonna try to speed run through a little bit because I want to cover a little bit of the happenings of what the Twitter sphere, or at least social media sphere, is talking about everywhere. But first, congratulations to FlyQuest Challengers for a dominant win over Maryville. APA was there to support his old team. Unfortunately, that luck didn't rub off, so FlyQuest did earn a championship of sorts. They're still, the LCS championship is still elusive for this team. Going forward, other news, NACL relegations, Lit Gaming and Mirage are now out of NACL for next split, and the two teams that took over is CCG, and I still can't remember what the other team is. Do you happen to have that info, Andrea?
Sorry. Well, sorry.
I think you got cut off there. Still with us?
Oh, no.
Hello?
Oh, she has been sent to the void, the abyss.
Sorry.
Hello. We got you.
Yes, there you are.
Okay. Yeah, so the promotion tournament was already concluded, the NACL promotion tournament. It was kind of unexpected, some of the teams that dropped out and some of the teams that stayed, I guess. I don't know. For sure, people expected Winthrop to promote, but it didn't happen. And we had instead CCG for sure was a favorite to promote. CCG, in case anyone doesn't know, it's Crimson, aka the other brother of the Viper. Sniper. There's another brother. His name is My Sword Crimson. He was by Crimson in pro. And then Yukino, who's Yukino Cat, who used to be a jungler for 100 Thieves Academy. Bradley, who used to be the top laner for Team Liquid Challengers, but he has swapped back to mid lane, which is his original role when he was playing back in amateur. He won. He was very close to winning. No, they didn't win, but he was very close to the top of Proving Grounds in 2021 when he was playing mid lane, and that's how he got scouted to play for Team Liquid Academy as a top laner. Instinct, who played in the LCS, he got a pentakill playing for TSM, I think in 2022. And Trevor, who's like an insane tier 3 player, I don't know what to say. Like, Trevor has been around forever, and he used to be on Cincinnati Fear, and now he's in CCG, and he's still winning games, surprisingly. I mean, he's just really, really a solid super player who always manages to bring value. And the other team that promoted is Blue Other, who has a very interesting mix of players. Lawrence, who used to go by Speedo, he used to play for Dignitas Academy. Music, who was playing last year in NACL. He was playing last year in NACL. Samikin is a new player, but he had a really, really good performance in this tournament. He was playing Lux, which was like very interesting. Like, people were asking, is Lux actually good, or is this player just good at this champion? Because he was like popping off on that champion, which was a little bit wild. And you know, with Fearless, you are allowed to have all of these extra picks because, you know, you have to have so much more prepared. So yeah. And then Lynx, who was in an ACL last year too on AOE. Robex, who was in an ACL last year too on Team Liquid third Team Liquid team. All of these people, except for Samikin, are people that have been around, you know, for a while. But these teams are definitely so CCG, as I said, it was very, very expectant for them to make it in because Bradley has been insane, like in the whole qualifier. In the whole qualifier tournament, he was just 1v9 winning games for CCG. He's legitimately amazing. Now that he rolls back to mid, I'm really excited to see Bradley in NACL again, in a different role this time, and I'm really, really excited to see how he matches up, because we have been having a really strong pool of North American mid laners coming up to the LCS, and I just think Bradley was someone that I love was a mid laner back in 2021 for Welcome Red, so I think it's amazing to see him back. I was really sad that he wasn't on a team, but he made it back to NACL anyway, so And yeah, the players in Blue Otter are very interesting too. Like, I think Samiki in particular, Music is a very good jungler, I think, like, very promising. So, I mean, we always have a million promising junglers, so not new. So yeah, these two promotions are very fun. I can't wait to see how it goes for the next split.
That's awesome to hear. And of course, I remember Bradley from the days he was with the TL Academy.
Yeah, he
with,
was a top laner.
Jan and Ayla, right?
Exactly.
He was a top laner back then.
Yeah, he was with them. He won a bunch of things with them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, kind of surprised he still hasn't gotten an opportunity. But now, I hope he continues to dominate and get away in, because I think he's one of those players that need to showcase that he can play at the LCS level. So there's a lot to be excited for this continued storyline, and I love that the NACL has the old flavor of relegation system. Unfortunate for some of the players, of course, but that they always have an opportunity to climb back in. With that said, our last segment for tonight is kind of to talk about this interview that dropped, we alluded to earlier, between Deegon and Inspired. I think he just came off that loss, and he got into the interview, and you can tell that he was still definitely bothered. I cannot count the number of vegan he stated in that interview, but that has become a buzzword now. I'll let you both kind of talk about your impression, your thoughts, and then I'll give mine.
Andrea, would you like to go first?
I'm sorry. I did not
watch that. Oh, okay. That's all right.
I just heard about it, yeah. I just got the too long didn't watch from people. Yeah.
I'm going to guess the TLDR of it.
All right. Well, I could talk about it for a little bit then. Okay. So where to start? First of all, I think there's two things to take away from this interview. Number one, I think it's super overblown the way people are reacting to it. I don't actually think that what he said was like that bad. Like, he's not saying like, oh yeah, no, Jensen's a horrible player and doesn't deserve to be playing pro play. Like, the criticisms that he was levying would be legitimate criticisms if I thought there was a lot of merit to them. I actually don't think that there was an incredible amount of merit to the criticisms he was giving. I think especially the one that gave me the most pause when he was like, yeah, in game one, I think Jensen was playing too vegan. Like, he was too passive. He wasn't willing to make plays. It's like, fucker, you put him on Karma. Like, what do you mean he wasn't willing to make plays? What do you want him to do, mantra cue them? Like, what? Like, I don't know. That's just so weird to me that his criticism about Jensen in game one was that just he was too fucking, too vegan for a player who's literally playing Karma in the first game. Like, that just doesn't make any sense. I will say the two takeaways first, and then I'll get back into, like, what I think and how I feel about it. I think it is, the things that he was saying was basically the interview was framed as if Inspired had been talking shit about Jensen, and he was saying that he was too vegan, he was too passive, and he didn't like playing with him, right? That is essentially the way that the interview was framed. Mm-hmm. That's how Reddit likes to think about it. Reddit likes to think that, like, oh yeah, no, he was fucking giga flaming mm-hmm. him the entire time. It was, like, disgusting. Like, the things he said was, like, irredeemable. It's like, okay, no, first, like, really, it really wasn't that bad. The flame was not even that bad. Like, that's flame that I would accept. Like, if I was a player mm-hmm. and I was getting flamed, I'd be like, yeah, no, maybe you're right. If it was actual legitimate criticisms, right? The second takeaway from this is that he is doing this on a public forum, right? And that, I think, is the biggest takeaway, is that he is mm-hmm. making these statements, making these claims, having these criticisms in a public interview that's going to be available to fucking everybody, right? It would be one thing if you're flaming your teammate mm-hmm. in private, if you're having this, if this is a part of your team talks, if you're doing the VOD review and you're having this conversation, I think that makes total sense. That's something that you can do. And that's something that's almost expected to happen on teams, right? But doing it in an interview where Jensen's, like, not even there to defend mm-hmm. himself, or your coaching staff isn't even there to talk you through, like, what, like, your thought process and stuff, where other players on the team who are also interacting mm-hmm. on the map aren't actually there to give their perspective on the situation. It's in really poor taste, and it just honestly looks really bad on Inspired to talk like that in this way, in this environment, right? That being mm-hmm. said, I don't think anything he said was even really that bad. He wasn't saying that, like, Jensen should retire. He wasn't saying that Jensen was, like, an incapable player. He had criticisms about Jensen's gameplay in that series, which you're going to have criticism of your friends, of your teammates play in any game that you play in which you're losing. There's going to be criticisms levied everywhere on every player in some sense or another, right? Mm-hmm. But I think the biggest issue is the fact that the focal point was Jensen's veganism, when in, I think, reality, he didn't criticize Busio nearly enough, who basically solo lost him the first game, in my opinion. I think Masu played overall pretty fine. I don't think there was anything he could really do to have a better impact in what he already had, given the situation that was happening on the top side of the map.
Yeah.
I think did he criticize Bwipo at all during that interview? I'm not sure if he ever did, but he fucking should have, because Bwipo was running it the fuck down. Like, I don't know if he thinks if Bwipo is a second coming of motherfucking Christ or something, but like, holy God, he refused to talk about Whippo's gameplay at all, despite the fact that he was giga-inting. Like, he was running it down in his laning phase. He was teamfighting horribly. He was getting caught on bad timers. He was mispositioning the entire game. Like, he was not playing well overall. And he did not levy any of those criticisms over on Bwipo, and instead, a lot of it was focused on the fact that he thought Jensen didn't play well, which is really weird to me, especially considering that I don't even think Jensen played that poorly. I think you have to take other things into consideration. Well, number one, he was the number one player that got attacked in the drafting, in the pick ban phase, right? So that must have been very difficult for people to adapt to. Second of all, they picked him Annie, which he hadn't played all fucking year. So I don't know, like, it is Annie, so it's not like, oh yeah, no, this champion is super mechanically difficult. It's not even necessarily about the mechanics. It's about, like, understanding the timers in which you can or should engage on a situation. So yeah, maybe his timers were a little bit off. Maybe his timers weren't exactly what he wanted inspired one of them to be. But also, like, to his credit, he's playing a champion he didn't play all year. Maybe they scrimmed with this champion for some reason, but I don't see why they would have. And also, They were picking this champion for him. I don't believe for a second that when Huey was available, Jensen was like, give me Annie. Because I think he's a much better Huey player. I think he plays Huey very, very well. And it was open in, I think, at least two of those games. So I don't know why you are in the first pick ban phase picking this man Annie when it is obvious. Like, if you have a problem with him in, like, the second game, you don't pick it for him in the third game. If you have a problem with his play in the third game, you fourth. Don't pick it for him third. In the fourth. You give him Huey. And you also, like, just quick tidbit on Fly Draft. They picked Senna in one of those games, and they had the opportunity to go Senna Nautilus 1-2, and they went Senna Annie instead. They picked Annie with Senna for no reason. And they gave Nautilus to Team Liquid for no reason. Like, that's besides the point. But still, like, obviously there's some level of drafting error that has to come into factor here. So I think, honestly, my biggest issue with this interview is the fact that I think Inspire's criticisms are poor. I think it is overall in poor taste, and I think what he is saying, he might even be projecting, because overall Inspire had shit games in a lot of these games. He had, like, a couple of good steals, and, like, he had, like, some good Lee Sin plays, but, like, overall, he did not play well, and he did own up to that, right? He did own up to, like, oh yeah, no, I could have positioned better in this fight. Mechanically, I could have been better here. I shouldn't have been on this timer, and he admits to that, right? But he's not. He's not talking about everything enough. Like, the focal point, the attitude of the interview, right? The attitude of the interview, the attitude of what he is saying is, like, Jensen is bad. I made mistakes, and everybody else is fine. But Jensen is making these mistakes. Mm. Jensen is the reason why we're losing. Like, that is the attitude that he's bringing to that interview. And sorry, I keep hitting my desk, so that's going to come up in the recording. But, like, the attitude that that Inspired had in that interview is that Jensen is a problem. He's the reason why we lost. And I don't think that that's a fair assessment of those games, because I think draft was a huge problem, and I think that his own play was a huge problem, and I think Bwipo was a huge problem. And he did not say anything about Bwipo. He didn't talk about the drafts as if they weren't, like, as if the drafts were actually good in every situation, because they fucking just weren't. And I think he should have levied more criticisms at himself, because I think it's obvious, especially in the fourth game, that he was tilted, right? And he was making bad plays, and he was making bad decisions. And off of the back of him making those bad decisions in a game where Masu could have, very legitimately had a chance at carrying, he and Bwipo threw the game away for literally no reason, for getting caught on, like, in just horrid positions, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's where perhaps some of the... And my thoughts are with yours, similar to yours, that the interview itself wasn't bad, and as people make it out to be.
you know, inspired, provided, you know, both himself as he played vegan in one of those games, but there was an overemphasis on Jensen. And as I listened to you, like, kind of dissect the game, there was a lot more areas that he didn't touch on. And I'm wondering how much of that is, you know, him just analyzing the game in real time. You know, that interview came right after the game. But at the same time, yeah, he was like praising, oh, it was a European mentality, but Boy and I played more aggressive, and Jensen probably didn't have that in his last team. I don't know where all of this is coming from, and perhaps that's him just processing verbally out loud. I don't know him to be like a guy that just, you know, be a jerk about things. He really does provide some solid analysis and look, but this was really coming at the heels of a loss, and maybe it was firing in the wrong direction. Just curious, Andrea, have you known Inspired to be have that kind of personality? I know you know him a little bit more.
Oh, sorry, I was off. Inspired, he's very blunt. We have known this. Remember one time when they came out of a game in EG, and he was like, I mean, Jojo was trolling this game, and he was like talking about the many mistakes that Jojo had made during that game. It was a little bit, I already also got a little bit heated up about that one, because it sounded like he was throwing Jojo under the bus that one game. So he's very
blunt. This is not out of character. Yeah, of course, sure. It's also not fair. Yeah. Absolutely. And it's the same way with Whipple. Like the way I listen to Whipple, it felt very similar. And I think I appreciate that when it comes to like talking internally with their players about how to point out some of these things. But that interview just kind of gave him space to hammer on one thing. And again, vegan is the whole thing I keep hearing over and over again. It prompted Papa Smithy to have to like tweet out something in defense of Inspires. I didn't think it was warranted. It wasn't that bad. And so for this one, I'll say, fans, you were crybabies about this one. This is not an even fair criticism. Maybe I'll give it 80-20 that y'all were crybabies because you all TLDR'd the whole interview instead of listening to it in its entirety. All right, folks, it's been a fun night. So, Andrea, Mage, anything to kind of sign us off with?
Can't wait for MSI.
Go ahead.
It's way too long. No, it's way too long until MSI. I don't know what we're gonna do.
I would say really quickly, just one last thing about the Inspired interview and that whole like European thing, like, oh, this is a European mentality. First of all, fuck you. Like, Jensen's also European, but also like, if you think that he has never had aggressive fucking players on his team before, like, he obviously doesn't know Jensen's career, because he was on that fucking 2019 team Liquid Squad that just absolutely bodied every team that they decided to play against. Like, they were a win lane, win game team. And like, that it made like, just like, that's obviously like him not being super familiar with Jensen's history, but like, still, like, fuck you. Like, that, you can't say that. Like, you don't know. You obviously don't know. That doesn't make any sense for you to say that. And also, one more thing, I would not be surprised to see FlyQuest mental boom at MSI because of this interview. Because even if Jensen can take it, even if this is their culture, I think there's always going to be an inching in the back of his mind of like, oh yeah, my jungler doesn't trust me. Maybe I should force something. Oh, my jungler doesn't trust me. Maybe I shouldn't do this. Oh, my jungler doesn't trust me. Maybe I shouldn't listen to him. Maybe I should listen to him even though I don't agree with him, right? I think there's a really good chance maybe FlyQuest mental boom. Ooh, maybe they have as bad of a summer split as they did last year. Who knows? And that's what I'm going to leave it with.
Man, look. I hope that doesn't happen, but I didn't even think of that angle. If everything comes out during MSI, it's going to be hard pressed for me to not think that they wouldn't like try to be proactive and make changes for this summer, but who knows? Who knows? They might not even have the time to make the changes. Cause I don't know. I don't know when summer starts. Is it like shortly after MSI?
It's usually like a week or a 2 week break. A
couple of weeks of rest. Yeah, I know EG didn't get much of a rest, but they also wasn't affected until later in the summer. But yeah, we got lots to cover. We're going to try to talk a little bit about the teams that will make it by the next show. We'll probably know who are all the participants, and it'll give me some time to just look over the competition and see what are our chances of making it.
Please don't make Team Liquid play MSI against Jun G in the first round. Please, God, don't make that happen.
We only want the Eastern teams face off each other.
Night versus Chovy. Give us G2. I want to see APA talk shit against Caps. I think it'd be so funny.
Oh, that would be so hilarious. So hilarious. Also, great storyline if Fly plays against G2 too.
That's true.
Because Whippo gets to have a little bit of familiarity. All right, folks. Thank you for hanging out with us. We will come back with more ways for you to be a fan.
Nice.
Have a good night, Alan.